Well, let's welcome you back to This Week in the Association. I'm Rob Pannier from the Minor League Sports Report, joined once again by my good buddy Kevin Lucco from 10th Inning Stretch. And this week, our special guest is Tim Costello, the voice of the Texas AirHogs. Tim, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. Appreciate you having me on. Happy to be here.
Well, it's exciting to have you here with us. We wanted to kind of give you an opportunity to talk a little bit about what's going on down there in Texas. But first of all, you're kind of new to the job. You were doing some broadcasting with the team last year, but how's this experience been for you this year?
Oh, it's absolutely great. I actually have a fair amount of experience doing high school, and I also worked with the Sugarland Seizures in the Atlantic League with Ira Lee been there for a bit. So I had spent some time doing that. I interned with the Skeeters in college, and I worked for a station calling districts, football, basketball, and baseball for a couple seasons. And then I really decided I wanted to make a jump full-time to minor league baseball. That's what I wanted to do full-time. So I spent a couple years getting my resume, everything that it needed to be able to go into a sales job in minor league baseball. So that's what I did last year. I had the ability to do about 35 home games on the internet radio last year for the AirHogs. I was also director of business development. And then this year I was fortunate enough to be named the voice of the team and to be able to do all 100 games and travel with the team on the road. It's been an unbelievable experience. The cities we've been to so far have been really exciting, warm, and welcoming. I've seen some really great ballparks. And then this year's ball club is really coming a long way from what we saw last year as far as the talent level, the ability, the even putting wins together. We won two games in a row for the first time this season, and we've won three of our last four. So it's been an exciting experience to watch this team grow a little bit as the season's gone on.
Now, even as a play-by-play guy, go ahead, Kevin, go ahead.
I was just going to mention that Tim brings up that he's also adept with sales, and I know some people don't realize that most broadcasters in this league, you're not just calling a baseball game. You're a lot of times you are doing media relations, and if you're not in the middle of the season, you are around the office, you're calling on businesses and just doing regular sales. So it is really helpful to be adept at many things to get that resume to look good to get a job like Tim has now.
You know, Tim, I was wondering, you and I were talking a little bit before the show began about how you actually are in two full different jobs here with the team.
Yeah, I am. In the off season, it really carries into the regular season. I'm the senior director of sales for the team. So a lot of the corporate sponsorships, bigger partnerships with the teams, it's really, I'm the one who ends up negotiating a lot of those. And it's been really fun to not only be a broadcaster, but I grew up in the restaurant industry, and I saw my dad take a $35,000 a week restaurant to a $90,000 a week restaurant. So the idea of growing something and being given that opportunity here with the AirHogs to take a ball club back, even in our own community, maybe not have the name recognition that it did 5 or 10 years ago, and to be able to kind of grow it organically that we have here in the last 2 years. But it's been really fun.
You took over for Joey Zanaboni, a guy I just love to kind of listen to kind of hear his broadcasts because they were fairly unique. Do you have kind of your own unique style, or are you looking for more traditional view in the way that you broadcast games?
I would say I'm probably a little bit more traditional. I grew up listening to Milo Hamilton every single night, was my guy in Houston for a long time. So if anything, my view of a baseball broadcast is kind of shaped by Milo. I had a great mentor, and he still is my mentor, Ira Liebman, who was the voice of the Skeeters for a long time. Really taught me a lot about, you know, what it means to be prepared to go on air and how to work some humor in here or there and really find good spots to hit you with a one-liner but not make it to where you're bigger than the game that you're calling.
You know, it's kind of neat to hear, like, a lot of these broadcasters throughout the league. Everyone seems to kind of have their own particular mentors or people that they style their broadcasts after. So it's kind of neat to hear a name like Milo Hamilton come up. Milo was someone that I listened to a little bit when he was with the Cubs in the early 80s when the old WGN thing was in its infancy.
Yeah, when you look at a guy like Milo, to me, he's had a career that really no one can touch. You know, he's called a World Series championship with the Pirates. He was there for Hank Aaron's record-breaking home run, and then He mentioned his time with the Cubs, and then to be there for a stretch of Houston baseball that stretch that he was there built the Astros realistically. Biggio, Batwell, Berkman, and Will Oswalt, Shane Reynolds, those were the guys that made that World Series championship in 2017 possible, and Milo was there for really all those great defining moments in baseball.
This year, I'm kind of interested, as you have taken over the full-time duties of broadcasting the Air Hogs game, how did you feel that last year kind of prepped you for being the full-time guy this year?
It taught me a lot last year, especially learning about this team. We had a lot of the guys back who were with the team at the end of the season last year, so it seems silly to say this name comfortability this year versus last year is so much more. I just feel comfortable saying these names, and it makes me feel smoother on the broadcast. And even just being able to call those 35 games, I had 2 years where I was doing, maybe 2 or 3 games a year trying to find some time to get in games, but most of the time I was back at ESPN Radio putting games out over the air. So being able to work through those games to get myself back into rhythm, to work the kinks out and to be a lot smoother on my broadcast and find ways to really technologically make things work with the limited equipment that I had. I was able to, now we run everything through an iPad when I travel on the road as far as our broadcasts go, and that was something I was able to play with last year on the home broadcasts.
You talked a little bit about the fact that there were a lot of the guys at the end of last season. I was kind of surprised to see there wasn't as many of the original Chinese players that were brought for Texas. From your knowledge, did these guys that they brought in for this season, were they just performing better in the offseason, or they're just kind of looking for a different development now?
It's more of a development. So last year, midway through the year, we had a switch of players as the older guys that were here went to go play in the Asia games. And so China really viewed that as an opportunity for those older guys who have been on the World Baseball Classic teams, who have played internationally before. It was a good warm-up for them before they went and played in the Asia games. But now with more of the Olympics in 2024 is the goal for this team to really get out there and not only qualify but compete at a high level. We have a lot more of a younger crowd this year. We have some of the same guys that are back, but it's mostly it's a 25 and under crowd. We have guys who are 19 years old who can't even buy beer starting at shortstop for us right now and playing a great defensive shortstop. But it's just more looking long-term, how can we get the younger players to develop as quickly as possible?
Maybe he's playing good shortstop because he can't dump by a beer yet.
That could be it.
How are you gelling with these players, and how do you think their chemistry is developing with the American players on the team?
Oh, it's been great. We have a great locker room, first of all. When you look at the American players that we have, who a lot of them understand coming in what the scenario was going to be. Several of them were here last year. The ones that weren't here last year knew very well coming in what this team was going to be made of. And you just have some real high character guys in there. People like Jonathan Maroney, who specifically told us numerous times, I'll go out to any elementary school, summer camp, whatever you want, with an Air Hogs jersey and a hat on to get some people out here. That's just the kind of person he is. And so you have guys like that who you can lead on a little bit on the road trips when you don't know necessarily some things, or even have, veterans like Josh Prince, who is our player hitting coach this season. He's been through it all. I was with Josh in Sugarland a little bit, and so I know him a little bit out there. So being able to have a player like that who has seen almost everything you have seen at this level, and being able to tell you how to work around some certain scenarios, or am I seeing things the right way, and I go check with them and say, hey, I saw this on the field. Is that really what happened? It's nice to have a great locker room up we do. And then the Chinese guys are great. I mean, they're here trying to get better. They want to make Major League Baseball the same way every one of the guys in affiliated ball or anywhere else does. They all want to be Major League players. So they may not be as far along, fundamentally speaking, as some of the guys in this league, but they're working really hard and they're catching up really quickly.
I actually thought the biggest difference last year when watching the guys originally was it was just kind of learning the speed of the game. Like a guy would hit a ground ball and you could tell the Chinese players were not used to a person advancing from first to second that quickly. So double plays didn't frequently happen because they just weren't used to that kind of speed. Are you finding that they're more in tune with the professional game now and things are moving along at a pace that they're actually right in tune with now?
Oh, absolutely. And I think a lot of that too has to do with the manager we have this year and Chris Bando versus what we had last year. Bando's a teacher at the end of the day. You know, yes, he's been a major league catcher and he's been a major league player. But this is a guy who's coached minor league baseball for a long time. He left minor league baseball because he wanted to work in college with young athletes. He's a guy who loves to teach the game of baseball. And so we had an amazing spring training this year, and we play a different brand of ball, really, I think, than any other team in the league. And our speed of the game is something that never was a problem from day one this season. I think they're playing at the same level as everybody else out there.
One of the things that Kevin – oh, go ahead, Kevin. Go ahead.
I think you were on the same track there, Rob. And one of the things we were talking about before the show was – talking about speed of the game, we're talking about how much the Airhawks have incorporated the stolen base into their game thus far this season, with 42 leading the league by far.
Yeah, it's a lot of us do the roster makeup too. You know, Josh Prince is a guy who he set a franchise record for stolen bases back in 2017 with the Skeeters. He's a guy that if he gets on, he's looking to run. And then you have a guy like Javion Randle as well at the top, who is at the top of the order, where I know his batting average may not be where you like to see it, but he gets on base at a 375, 380 clip, even with the batting average only in the 180s right now. So he's getting on base frequently, and both those guys are top two in the league in steals. I think we have them at 14 and 11 respectively, if I remember correctly off the top of my head. But even Li Ning was top five in steals before his injury earlier in the season, and now he's back and healthy and looking to run again too. So we play a very aggressive style of baseball. We're gonna bunt, but we're not just bunting to move runners over. If you're third baseman's back, we're trying to bunt for a hit. We're gonna turn that bunt into a double if we can.
That's exciting to hear that, because that's one part of the game that I've been really disappointed in over the last decade or so, is to see the stolen base kind of disappear. And it's fun to see a manager who wants to incorporate that game plan as part of the action for him.
I mean, when you look at our lineup, we know we're not going to have a 20 or 25 home run guy in our lineup. You know, if we can get 10 or 12 homers out of three different guys, I think we'd be happy with that. But what we can do is we can put a ton of runners in scoring position, and we can put a lot of pressure on opposing pitchers and hopefully get into bullpens a little bit earlier in games than some of these managers would like to see, and have some chances later on in series that we didn't have last year, because last year we played more of your standard big league style baseball where you get on, you wait for someone to hit you over, where this year we're going to put some pressure on you and your pitcher is going to have to think about the guy dancing around on first and second.
You know, it's a modern thing style for the fans to come out, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
You don't see a lot of the running anymore, and yeah.
You know, I have to tell you, Tim, one of the things I really enjoyed about watching these group of guys last year was how much fun they were having. You could see them kind of warming up before games, and they were laughing and they were enjoying themselves. It didn't matter whether there was a 5-game losing streak or if they came off a big walk-off win. They were really enjoying playing baseball. And I thought, wow, I hope that the players around the league would kind of, you know, watch what was going on there, because I think sometimes this becomes too much of a job for players and they miss out that this is supposed to be a game that's fun.
You're absolutely right. You know, we are among the few who are blessed to make a living around a game. You know, I never thought growing up that this in my wildest imagination would be possible. And for this to really be the first team that I'm around and have these guys who, it's like watching little leaguers show up every day with these guys. And I mean that in the best way possible, because it's about the energy and the excitement that they bring to the ballpark, because they're learning as much about the game as they possibly can, and not just between the lines, but we've just signed a couple new big leaguers this last week. Matt was with us last year, he's back this year, and and Brett Eibner as well. These are guys that are full of knowledge, that as soon as you bring people like that into your locker room, the Chinese understand that let's soak as much up as we can from being around guys like this. And I feel the same way as far as let's soak up as much of that knowledge as I can as well, and hope to learn as much as I can from being around guys who have been at that ultimate level.
Yeah, as the saying goes, it's play ball, not work ball.
Absolutely.
Sometimes they forget that. Well, let's jump into the American Association for this week, and we first of all begin with our player and pitcher of the week, Taylor Jordan from the Sioux City Explorers, named as the pitcher of the week after tossing a complete game shutout where he was one batter over the minimum. Tim Colwell from the Fargo-Moorhead Redhawks is named as the player of the week. You got to see both those guys recently, Tim, so what are your thoughts about Jordan and Colwell?
I'll talk most about Colwell. He was a guy who, when we showed up in Fargo, he may not have gotten off to the best start, but he really heated up against Airhawks pitching staff, and he continued to hit well in the home series we played against them. But pretty versatile ball player, played a little bit of infield, played some outfield for them, a pretty good stick hitting in the number two spot from the left side, a really versatile guy. And Jordan, if I remember correctly, pitched a very good game against the Airhawks, was pretty tough to hit, and really held the Airhawks offense in check. That was a time where we really hadn't quite find our stride yet, but he pitched a really nice game and kept the Airhawks at bay, unfortunately.
Kevin, the league didn't agree with us for pitcher of the week, choosing Luke Westfall, but there were some other people out there that thought that our choices weren't right either.
Why don't we tell you about Jesus Sanchez? Yeah, Brad Aldridge down at Cleburne did not, I don't know if it's a, he didn't agree with our picks, but he just kind of wanted to chime in with a couple of railroaders who he felt were worthy of consideration. So, maybe for some lively talk on Monday through social media. But it's all good, just talking baseball.
Absolutely. Well, let's move on to the St. Paul Saints. We first of all begin with Eddie Medina, who broke the St. Paul Saints record for scoreless innings. And now I believe at 32. And it's starting tonight. Where are we at right now with him, Kevin? Has he got a scoreless inning still going?
Guess what? Your timing is incredible. He just gave up a run.
Oh, okay. Well, the streak comes to an end. But quite a run for the...
He got through the first inning scoreless, but... First two guys reached in the second, double by T.J. Bennett and a single by Daniel Comstock has ended the streak.
Quite a run by the right-hander, though, who we still don't really understand how he isn't in affiliate ball right now.
Well, I think the talk is, from my sources, is that he's just, for the level he would be signed in, he's probably too old to be pitching, which would be high A. And... I just feel like maybe he didn't have the stuff for double A's, so he's kind of one of those tweener guys, but you'd hope that maybe somebody would just take a flyer on him as a double A team. So, and who knows, it could happen yet.
Tim, you've got to
say, I was happy the Airhawks were able to avoid him in our four-game series. We were fortunate enough to miss him in the rotation when you guys were in town.
You've got to see some of the better pitchers so far in the league. Guys, Jason Garcia's had five victories already, and Luke Westfall's looked dominating early on. Has one guy kind of stood out to you from what you've seen so far, or who you see as kind of the dominant pitcher of the league right now?
There really hasn't been one, I think, that was really stood out too much. I think, in general, Lincoln's pitching staff was excellent. I saw a lot of talent out of them, and I mean, Tepish, I know we got the win out of Tepish, but he actually held us hitless through four innings, scoreless through six. He was phenomenal. I mean, looking back at my book, for you guys, Belzer was a game that we really had trouble getting anything going against him.
Well, scoop on Belzer is that he's soon to be signing with the Major League Ball Club pending a physical. So that's all the info I can give at this time.
Well,
that
we know
that makes sense based on what I saw there.
We know the Saints have brought in a new right-hander out of Double-A with the Dodgers to replace him, Karch Kowalczyk, I believe is the way that you say that. And we did want to mention Dante Bichette Jr., who was the Saints' third baseman last year, was Player of the Month in the Atlantic League, signed by the Washington Nationals. Had quite a kind of struggled early on last year, Kevin, but really turned things around and earned himself a place back in affiliate ball.
Well, I think maybe the little experiment with Bichette trying to be a catcher may have also affected him at the plate. It just seemed like once he became an everyday third baseman, he didn't really have to worry about the catching position, and it just seemed like the second half of the season last year, the hitting took off with him along with the rest of the team. So may have just been having less to think about was a plus for him.
We move on to the Chicago Dogs, where Luke Westfall isn't the only becomes a pitcher who winds up seeing his scoreless streak come to an end. But the thing we want to talk about, Tim, since you're here with us, two big losses to those Texas AirHogs. So tell us a little bit about how your team got that going there.
Absolutely. I mean, that was really – I feel like this could be a turning point in the season for our ball club. But, I mean, you look back at game one, and the AirHogs really were – we were able to kind of jump out early. We went up 5-0 early on, and it started off with Chen Chun Peng, who was able to take advantage of a hitter-friendly ballpark out there in Chicago, and hit his first ever career home run. The wind was blown out. He kind of got up in that jet stream, and it was a big reason why we jumped out early. But we get off to a 5-0 lead. But you know, one of the best pitching outings of the season I saw this was from Kevin Hilton. I know he isn't going to get a lot of mention because the strikeout numbers, stuff like that, aren't huge, but the ERA has continually gone down. He's top 10 in the ERA now, and he left that game throwing only 75 pitches through 7 1/3. He did leave a runner on base that came around to score after 3 errors were made in the inning, but so we were after the 5-0 lead. The Dogs tried to come back on game one, but the AirHogs bullpen shut it down. But game two was really the one that I think was the backbreaker for Chicago when you look at the fact that they were up pretty significantly through 7 innings in that game. And then the AirHogs, through 6 innings, the AirHogs had a run in the 7th, and then Stuart Imes hit the big 3-run homer in the top of the 9th inning. That was a big moment for Stu, as I know he's not gotten off to the season, to start this season that he wants, and has been seeing the ball a lot better lately, has been getting on base a lot more, but hadn't seen the power stroke, and I hope for him that was the big moment to kind of jumpstart his season to get him going on the direction he was last year.
You know, Kevin, when you look at a series like that, and Tim even mentioned about how Chicago kind of had to feel like they were walking away with at least game two in that series, you wonder how the psyche of that is for the Dogs when this is a series that they probably feel like they should even maybe even sweep and then wind up getting swept themselves.
I watched quite a bit of the end of game one, and as I'm watching it, once the starter came out of the game, it just seemed like the game was slipping away from the AirHogs, and they managed to hold on because Chicago's got some bats in that lineup that no lead's going to be really safe with them. So it was give credit to Texas for holding on. And then, yeah, you got to the bullpen with Goose and Brown on game two. So I think the rainout last night, I'm sure Chicago really wanted to get that game in and try to salvage one game in the series. So I think Dogs are reeling them just a little bit. We'll see what happens this weekend.
How did you?
I myself was actually a little bummed for the rainout yesterday because I really think the way that game two ended, I couldn't wait to start game three. If we could have played game three 20 minutes after game two, I would have signed up and said absolutely, because that momentum that Stuart Imes with that one swing, I feel like the whole season kind of changes with that swing there, because that we just went into Lincoln, who was a first place ball club, and I know we only won 1 of 4, but you know, you can go back and look at the replay in game two and see how bad the call was in out number 27 to end that game. That would have been a tie ball game with our number 3 hole hitter coming up. We win game three, and then game four didn't go our way, but then we go into Chicago, who was a half game ahead of you guys to start that series. And we took 2 from them. So we, 2 of the best teams in the league, and we just played our best baseball on this road trip. We had a 3-3 road trip against a first and a second place team.
we were going to come and talk more about Texas later on, but because you brought up great points, I think we're just going to stay with them for just a moment there. Stuart Imes, I want to mention. He had a four-hit game.
Dog.
Yeah, absolutely. He had a four-hit. He had a four-hit game for you a couple games ago. I think he's had a five-hit game already this season. The guy really can swing the bat.
He can, and he's a guy who he's big into mechanics, and I think a little bit maybe too much at times, and that might have been a bit to his detriment at the beginning of the season. But when he's seeing it right, and his, as he calls it, his chain is moving in the right direction. You've seen the results here lately because he's using all fields. He's hitting the ball hard the other way, and that power stroke is back a little bit because that home run he hit to walk it off, the wind wasn't helping that one. That was just a straight laser beam of a line drive that he jumped all over Goosen Brown, who is a pretty darn good closer in his own right.
Yeah, very true. Very true. You talked a little bit about
go ahead,
Kevin.
Okay, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Well, I do have one question to bring up before we do get off of Texas. Yeah, Kansas City coming to town this weekend. And it's an odd schedule. There's a game on Friday night and a scheduled doubleheader on Saturday.
Oh, the doubleheader will be Sunday. The scheduled doubleheader is Sunday. Father's Day doubleheader. I'm not really sure exactly what happened there, quite frankly. The league scheduled that one. It's experience to me. This is my first year of celebrating Father's Day myself, so I'm excited to be able to have a little extra baseball and to be able to have my little girl up at the ballpark with me for the first time.
Well, check you out, a brand new dad.
Will those be 2 9-inning games or 2 7s?
It'll be 2 7s. Okay.
A brand new dad. Congratulations there, Tim. That's awesome.
Thank you.
Awesome. Yeah, I did want to also bring up, you talked a little bit about momentum. Did you feel that kind of after winning those first two games that it was a letdown for the team that you weren't able to get in that third game?
I think a little bit of both. There's obviously the guys who want to play, but knowing that we had a drive from Chicago back to Dallas, I'm never going to be upset being able to hit out on the road a little bit earlier and actually get our full off day here today as opposed to getting back at 3 or 4 in the afternoon.
Well, let's move on to the Milwaukee Milkmen. You know, Kevin, over the last couple of years, you and I have seen players that have done something that was out of bounds, and managers have stepped up and gotten rid of that player, and we've applauded them for being, you know, having the integrity to put a premium player. We saw last year with Gary that had one of their very best players got released, and we appreciate when managers are willing to not put up with that kind of conduct. This year, Milwaukee's had an instance with their own coach.
Yeah, an incident happened at a Kokomo laundromat where hitting coach C.J. Steelke verbally dressed down a team equipment manager that was helping out with the laundry, and of course the video got around, and as the way it is in social media nowadays, it's pretty easy for something to go viral, and I believe someone had mentioned that the equipment manager has special needs, and that just makes it even worse. That hits home to me. I have a stepson that has autism, and I know it's a big deal for special needs people when they do get a chance to get out and be a part of the public, do a job. So just really kind of disappointing to hear about what happened, and I'm glad the Milkmen made the right move in given C.J. Steelke his release from his posting job.
Tim, you've been around minor league baseball? Go ahead, Tim.
I was going to say, it's tough, too. You know, this is year one of that franchise, and they're not even playing in their home ballpark right now. They're getting 50 fans a game. And so is that really, if you're the parent of someone, are you going to want to bring your kid out to see that if that guy's still there coaching when they do come to town?
I think their best hope is that news doesn't get back to Milwaukee. But, yeah, it is the right thing by letting the coach go, so hopefully that will, for their sake, he'll kind of sweep it under the rug a bit. But, you know, maybe be a little bit of a better judge of character when bringing your coaches or your players in.
Yeah, you know, I think, though, it sets kind of a good precedent for a team, though, to say, hey, if we make mistakes, we correct them. You know, and don't judge us just on the one incident, but judge us on the fact that we do the right thing. Nothing to that. Okay. Let's move on to the Fargo-Moorhead Redhawks, which they suffer a big injury when Chris Jacobs suffers a little shoulder injury there for them.
Yeah, there was he got caught between second and third, and when diving back to second base, he injured his shoulder. We don't know the extent of what the injury was. It happened on Tuesday night, and he's out of the lineup yesterday afternoon and now tonight. And go figure, with him out of the lineup, they scored 7 runs last night and got a pair against Eddie Medina already through 2 innings tonight. But in the long run, if he's out for a while, that's a pretty big blow to the lineup, but there's still plenty of guys around that can pick up the slack.
That guy's pop is unbelievable. I can say personally, I know he hit 3 home runs against their Hawks pitching, and one of which is still in the stratosphere somewhere, because he's just unbelievably strong. It's unbelievable to watch that guy hit the baseball, and it looks like batting practice sometimes when he's out there hitting in live games.
We move on to Winnipeg, where Victor Capion sets the team record in saves. You know, this kind of surprised me. 38 saves is the team record. And, you figure that a guy would have, like, especially a franchise that's been around that long, that a guy would have, like, 60 or 65 or something. But I guess, when you're a good closer, you don't really stay around in the American Association for very long.
No, with a 100-game season, too, there's a lot of years you're not going to rack up more than maybe 20, but. Yeah, like you said, a good closer, if your stuff is good enough, you're not going to be an American Association lifer.
Kevin McGovern struggling with the team still a little bit right now and has been kind of inconsistent to this point.
Yeah, well, last year he went 5-12, 4.7 ERA, but, you have to realize he's got the trust of Rick Forney after being an extraordinary pitcher for them for a couple of years, and hoping he was going to rebound, but so far he's had 6 starts. 2 of them been really good. 1 was average, and now he's had a few clunkers. So we'll have to track that as the year goes on to see if McGovern can get back on track.
Tim, as you've kind of looked around the North Division so far, who's kind of looked like a team to beat for you?
I like a lot of what I see with Fargo especially. The left side of their infield is to me as good as almost anybody in the league. When you look at Yoshan Medina, you look at Leopoldo Pino over there, when they're healthy, they have Jacobs. And a sneaky addition for them was Carell Prime coming in, just barely into that first week of the season after being one of the last releases from Winnipeg. We had him last year, and I think he looks in unbelievable shape this year. He's down probably 20, 30 pounds. When we saw him, he was hitting for one of the best averages in the league, and I think they're going to be really a sneaky good team up there. And Chicago, St. Paul, all those teams are really, really good. Your pitching staff up there in St. Paul, Kevin, is unbelievable. It's the best in the league. The ERA when you guys were against us was 4/10 of above the second place team in the league when I was doing the staff at that time. I mean, those numbers are ridiculous. So it's going to be tough to score runs against St. Paul this season.
We're in agreement with that. We also want to mention the Gary South Shore Railcats end a 5-game losing streak with their victory yesterday against Winnipeg. We move to the South. 4 teams went 4-6 last week. Tim, what's going on in the South Division right now?
There's going to be a lot of parity in the South Division, I think, as the season goes on. Cleveland's off to a really good start, and they have some new ownership and new management out there, and I'm not sure what's going on with Sioux City. That was a really good ball club last year. And they're not off to the same start that they were last year. Their left side of the infield, too, is another one that I feel like is up there with the best when you've got, especially what Saramo does at third base. It's a really tough division, but it's just people are off to a little bit of a slow start this season. Kansas City, the defending champions, I know they got off to a hot start. They may have a little bit of a lull, so it's gonna be a race to the finish here, I think, in the South.
I think you'll see some separation once it just seems like there's been a lot of play with North versus the South. So I think when we get into the teeth of the season and we start seeing more series within the division, I think we'll get a little bit of a separation and find out who's going to be around the end and who might be looking to be a trader some come the last couple weeks of the season. But yeah, you make a good point at Sioux City. That one side of the infield with Nate Sampson and Jose Sermo, you got to think if they can get some pitching, and they've got the bats there where I'd never count to see Montgomery team out of a race. But, you know, they're five back right now, four back out of the playoff spot, so there's a lot of season to go. But as we know, it can get late pretty early, so we'll see what happens with the X's.
The one team that did perform well last week was the Sioux Falls Canaries, who have been 8-2 over the last 10 games, and it's been the big inning for them, Kevin.
Yeah, they've had big comebacks. Two of the three games that they won versus the Cleveland Railroaders featured big innings. And, you know, we didn't think that was going to happen when we saw their lineup this year. But, and it was hard to get a good read on the team when they had such a long road trip to start the season with. Boy, since they got back to the Birdcage, they found home cricket and be to their liking. And they keep it up, they're going to be for real.
Tim, I know when the Canaries came to Texas, they were not very cordial guests.
I was going to say, they were not exactly fun guests. The Birds flew the coop that way. Seven-run inning on us on the 22nd and in the seventh inning, and then they put numerous three spots on the board. They hung quite a few crooked numbers up, but we hope to return the favor when we head up north that way.
I'm sure you're planning on it already, so no doubt about it. Let's move on to Kansas City. Darnell Sweeney becomes the third player in the last couple of weeks to be signed by an affiliate club joining the Pittsburgh Pirates, but they lose their closer, and going to be kind of an interesting situation there, Kevin.
Yeah, their closer Paredes just came back from a blister issue, and when he came out to close the other night, he got pulled again, and all the speculation was a blister again, but now we find out that he does have an elbow injury, and it could be an extended absence for him. So we'll see who steps up. You have a couple good arms in that pen with Jackson Lowry and Nick Lee, who could both be your closer. And I believe Carlos Diaz was the original closer, and he's hurt too. So I was mentioning on Dan Vaughn's Mixlr chat last night that if Joel Calfa-Pietro wins a championship in this league again this year, just rename the manager of the year of the award the Calfa-Pietro Award.
That was quite a phenomenal season last year. Talking about those Cleveland Railroaders, Angel Rosa, goes out. You were mentioning, Tim, about how solid that left side of the infield is for Cleveland. Rosa, a huge loss for them for right now.
Right, and they took an interesting route. They signed a couple of rookie infielders. So, as they like to say down in Cleveland, Josh Robertson's got the lab coat on and putting some potions together and trying to see if he can get some luck out of going the rookie route. So, if a guy can pull off, I'd say Josh Robertson could do it.
How do you see this affecting Cleveland down there, Tim?
I think that, I mean, Josh Roberts is a big portion of it, right? He's a guy who's been successful in this league for a long time, especially with what he did in Wichita there. I think they've kind of earned the nickname Wichita Town a little bit through what's happened this season. But it's nice to have another competitive team down there and Cleveland for the fans out there. And as far as our rivalry goes a little bit, it's not quite the same now. But it's two separate ownership groups, but we definitely want to go down there not this series, but the next one, and win three ball games if we can.
I do have something to say about Cleveland that they do need to work on or get rid of. The orange and blue striped bib overalls that they make their ushers wear are just hideous looking. I don't know who thought this would be a good look on anyone, for that matters, but if you watch one of the games on TV for Cleveland, you'll see it, and it just... I don't know. I feel sorry that they make them wear them. So, this is my 10 cents. I think so.
Yeah, I think that must be the new ownership group. When they came in, they said, let's go with more of a conductor look or something like that, because I don't remember seeing those before, but I'll keep an eye out for those.
Oh, boy, yeah. You can't help but to notice them. It's not good.
I look forward to it.
Something for Tim to mock in his broadcast down there while that's going on. You know, I want to say, though, I thought Brad told us that he became responsible for what was going on around the ballpark during games. Did I hear that wrong?
I think he is. I just don't know if the bib overalls was his call. I even talked to him about it, and he goes, yeah, my daughter is kind of doing some stuff with them, and she's not a fan of them either. So as much as Brad would love to somehow woo Morgan Kalenda, the MC at T-Bone Stadium down to Grand Prairie, I don't think you're going to sell her on Grand Prairie with the opportunity to wear those bib overalls. So,
oh, we're not wearing bibs. Don't worry about that. But
maybe. Oh, I'm sorry. That's at Grand Prairie. I'm at Cleburne. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's all good.
We also want to mention down there in Sioux City, Michael Lang reaches the 600 mark, becoming the 13th player, I believe it is, in American Association history to reach that mark. So congratulations to Michael down there. Great to see him back and playing, so we're excited about that for him. We jump around to other independent news, and we start with the Cuban national team will be in Ottawa.
Yeah, you know, there was a lot of hearsay, a lot of back and forth, but there was talk that they weren't going to be able to get to a series in Ottawa because of the whole issue with passports, but it sounds like everything is resolved, and the Cuban national team will be able to fulfill its commitment again from Ottawa. I don't know if they're playing any other Can-Am teams or not, but we do know that they will be heading north of the border to take on the Ottawa champions.
Tim, what do you think about you came in a year after the Salina Stockade, where a team that was kind of just in for a season to fill a spot in the league. And I don't know if you've had kind of an opportunity to see some of these teams around independent baseball that just are kind of traveling teams. But, I've not been a big fan of this, but I'm kind of interested in your thoughts about that.
You know, I saw one in the Atlantic League when I was over there, and there's actually a couple of our guys on the team now that were part of that Salina Stockade team in 2017. And from talking to them, it sounds probably about the worst situation you could be in as a ball player. They were not paid the same level as the other people in the American Association. They were paid a Pecos League salary.
We know how different that is.
Yeah, it's about a fifth of what the guys make in the American Association. I mean, they didn't have any air conditioning in their van. There are literally no windows. They're just going to Texas. I mean, for love of the game, really, at that point, because they're not ready to hang up the spikes. So I will never want to take away an opportunity from a guy who's still willing to play, but I do think that I think those guys don't get treated fairly within these leagues when you know that the American Association would have been a tough spot 2 years ago if Salina doesn't step in and play those games. So I think maybe there's a way to look at maybe compensation a little bit more for some of those players who are playing on a whole American Association schedule but not being paid American Association salary.
God, yeah, it's tough for some of them beyond food.
I can't imagine traveling to Texas with no guarantees. Yeah, it's $50 a week. $50 a week. That's what those guys make in the Pecos League.
And then $20 a day to eat. So one of the guys told me he lived on 7-Eleven hot dogs. As a professional athlete, it's kind of hard to perform at your best when that's what you're eating every day.
Isn't that a championship diet right there? I mean, do you have a hot dog?
I cut hot dogs out of my diet, unfortunately, but I don't know about everybody else.
But you're former champions.
You're a smart man, Tim. So, Tim, tell us what's going on with you these days and what you're going to have going on in the upcoming weeks.
It's a pretty exciting week for us at the ballpark. We've got a lot going on. We've got launch ball coming back, and actually, kind of a sad note is one of our officers who patrols our games has actually lost his life in the line of duty over the last week. So we're doing all the proceeds of our launcher ball are going to go to his family and their foundation this week. So we're really excited to be able to do that for them. And then Saturday is Disney Princess Night at the ballpark. And then we're doing our Father's Day barbecue on Sunday. So really, really excited to be able to do all that. And we actually got off day on Monday as well, so I'm excited to be able to spend a little time with the family and relax before we have a quote-unquote road series at Cleburne, so I'll be able to take advantage of sleeping in my own bed for an extra 3 days there.
That would be nice. Kevin, do you big Father's Day plans for you?
Oh, well, at my house, this is how it kind of goes. A birthday was in the middle of February. My wife, stepdaughter and stepson celebrated by them going to the Kelly Clarkson concert while I drove by myself all the way up to Duluth for a hockey game. So tell you that to tell you this. For Father's Day this year, I get to work half the day and then come home, and then it's just me with the dogs for 2 or 3 days as the wife and stepson head over to Wisconsin Dells for another vacation. So yeah, that's what Father's Day is going to be for me. Luckily, you know, I still have my dad around, and maybe I'll wrangle him to come over to the house and we'll grill some brats or make him a steak. But yeah, it just seems like now apparently my birthday and Father's Day gifts are everyone fails on me.
Is that a good thing?
Well, you know, it depends on how you look at it, I guess. I leaves me with 5 dogs to take care of, so that gets to be a little bit of a handful, but when they're not barking, I get quiet. It's kind of nice.
And what's going on with Kevin Lucco with the 10th inning stretch?
Well, I talked about last week. I dabbled a little bit with covering some town hall and got some other sticks in the fire as far as maybe letting some local people do stories, and I will throw them on right and maybe get some aspiring bloggers to get some exposure through the 10th inning stretch and whatever readership I have right now. On my own, I am mostly just doing weekly recaps of what's going on with the St. Paul Saints and adding news and notes from throughout the American Association.
I personally want to congratulate the St. Louis Blues on winning the Stanley Cup Championship. So congratulations.
Well, you're alone on that one, buddy.
Congratulations on that. But I did want to have a little rant here today. So now that we got Tim on, he can include him in this because confused about why all of a sudden there is all this attention on UFOs. What's all that about?
I've never heard anything.
Okay, well, they're talking about all these Air Force pilots and stuff like that are publishing, you know, videos or whatever of UFOs. I'm kind of curious, are we alone out there anymore, or are we being invaded by some other spot maybe?
I don't think we're being invaded, but I think it's definitely a high plausibility in the entire existence that there is something else out there.
You know, Kevin, it'd explain a lot of people that we've met if there was UFOs out there.
I've followed that. The only video I guess I've seen that's been out there lately is of a pitcher in the Northwoods League. Was pitching for Duluth, and keep in mind they're playing at lacrosse. At lacrosse, it's like, I think, 4 bars per square mile. pitches the ball, walks behind the mound, and proceeds to power vomit 4 times.
Oh. Yuck.
And so we were able to kind of ascertain from the Twitter video and some people comment on it, we were thinking maybe it was a lot of Bush Light that came back up. It was not a good look for the league, let's put it that way.
What a good note to end this week's show on.
I'm not been looking at UFOs. I've been looking at pitchers thrown up with quite the exit velocity.
Oh, that probably was a high exit velo on that one.
Oh, it was amazing. But you know, it was a good commercial for field turf because I suppose it was a lot easier to clean it up than if it would have happened on grass.
So you just close that off and you keep on going.
There you go.
Is there sabermetric stats on that, like angle and all that other stuff associated? That's awesome. Well, that's a good note to end on. So we want to thank Tim Costello for joining us this week. And for Kevin Lucco, I am Rob Panier, and we will see you next time on This Week in the Association.